Today is Saturday, 8th February 2025. We are gathered here today for the 170th session of Mindfulness for Beginners in English, conducted by Nisaran Wanair. I would like to warmly welcome Venerable Homagabadama Kusala Thero, as usual, to this session. I'd also like to welcome everyone who has joined via Zoom, Facebook live stream, or whoever may be watching later. Our program, as usual, will commence with the in-session practice of mindfulness, followed by a talk on today's topic, which is a continuation from last week's topic. We will then move on to any reports and any questions that you may have. So to begin today's session, I would like to welcome Venerable Homagabadama Kusala Thero to start the in-session practice of mindfulness. Over to you, Bhante.
Okay, everyone. So today we have some time to do a mindful practice. Today I thought to do a guided walking session, because we haven't done a walking session for a long time. So it would be nice to do a walking session today. Now, most of you are already aware how to practice mindful walking, but in case you are new here, we will give some guidance as well. For the mindful walking, you need some space where you can walk comfortably, maybe around 10-15 steps. That type of a pace would do. Once you have selected the space, start walking in a comfortable manner. You can walk back and forth in this space. And while walking, we try to be mindful of our walking process. And when you pay attention, you might notice the sensations at your feet, the texture of the ground that you're walking. Maybe it's a wooden floor, maybe it's a cement. So you feel the texture accordingly. Then you feel which parts of your feet is touching the ground. The heel touches first, maybe the middle part is touching, then the ball of your feet and the toes. So that way we try to take mindful steps. And time to time your attention might wander into the thoughts, memories, future planning, then maybe even the surrounding things that you see. This way the mind goes away. But what we are trying is becoming mindful that we have wandered away and bringing your attention back to the walking. Again, try to take few mindful steps. Time after time you get distracted, your mind wanders away, but you can realize it and gently bring your attention back to the walking sensations. So this is what we are going to do. I think we can take about 10 minutes to practice mindful walking. You can start walking, and when you hear the bell, you can return back to your seats. Okay, everyone, now you can return back to your seats. So that was our time to do a mindful walking session today. This is just to give you an idea so you can practice on your own. With that, Sonal, you can take over.
Thank you, Bante. Next on the agenda is the talk on today's topic. This is a continuation from last week. It is cognitive behavioral therapy. We discussed this last week, and again this week we will continue this. For this, I invite Bante Dhammakusalathero to start the talk on today's topic.
Thanks, Sonali. Hello, everyone. So today it's a continuation from the last time. And if you attended last week's program, you might remember we discussed the principle behind this cognitive behavioral therapy, right? So the principle was whatever the thoughts that you encourage, whether it's positive or negative, those thoughts will grow in you. Those thoughts will become powerful in you. So it's up to you to encourage whether the positive or the negatives, right? So that was our discussion last time. Today, we will take some time to discuss a little bit further on the same topic. Now, there's this story about someone traveling in the woods. This person was traveling for some time, few days, and he was exhausted. He didn't have anything to eat. He didn't have anything to drink. So after traveling in a forest for a few hours, he was really exhausted. And he sat down under a tree and, you know, trying to rest a little. While sitting, this person thought to himself that if I had something delicious to eat, it would be very nice. That was his thought. The hunger created this thought in him. So he thought about all the delicious food that he would like to have. And suddenly, all the food that he was thinking about, they suddenly appeared before him. So he was very happy and he gulped down most of the food and was very happy because his hunger was over. Now, still he is thirsty. Then he thought that if I had something to drink as well, that would be very nice. And he thought about all the drinks that he would have. And suddenly, all the drinks, they appeared before him and he was very happy. He had all the drinks. Now his stomach is full and his thirst is over. Now the wandering mind, he started thinking, what's happening here? When I thought about the food, they appeared before me. When I thought about all the drinks, they appeared before me. So this place might be haunted. That's why this is happening. And after he thought about this, he could see certain signs of a haunted place. Right? So he was even more worried. Then he thought maybe these ghosts or these creatures will come and harm me. These creatures will come and try to, you know, bother me, try to scare me. That was his thought next. And as a result, the ghost, they came and they scared him. They tried to harm him. They threatened and created fear in him. And during the process, he thought maybe they will come and kill me. And as a result, those ghosts, they came and killed this person. Right, so this was a story. Now, after the story, the person is asking what's happening here. Where he was sitting. Actually, he was sitting under a wishing tree, right? That's what was happening, and whatever he wished, those things came through, right? So this is the story about a wishing tree. And in our lives also, we too have a wishing tree. What is the wishing tree that we have in our lives? Our own mind. Especially when we discuss this type of a topic, we can really see how our mind becomes a wishing tree. Whatever the thoughts that we encourage, they become stronger and stronger. Those things create habits in us. Those things change our feelings and behaviors, right? So you have the option. You can either encourage the positive thoughts, good ones. You can either encourage the negative thoughts, the bad ones. Accordingly, your feelings and the behaviors will change. That's the idea behind this topic, right? So we too have a wishing tree. All of us has one. But the problem is, how are we using it? Are we using it for our benefit? Or are we using it to harm ourselves? That's the question that you have to ask yourself. If that person was wishing for good things, food, thirst, he was wishing for those things, they came through. If that person was wishing for fear, pain, death, then those things also came through. So it's up to that person whether to wish for good things or whether to wish for bad things, right? So that's the very idea behind this topic that we are discussing. Whatever the thoughts that we encourage, they become stronger, they become habits in us, right? So that's the idea. And today, we can take some time to discuss this further and really relate this topic into the practice of mindfulness. Now, last time also we touched a little bit on the mindfulness side of this topic, but today we go a little deep into the practice and see how we can really relate this topic to the way we are practicing. Now, when it comes to the worldly people, they think that they don't have a control over the thoughts that they are having in their minds, right? Whatever the thoughts that they have in their minds, they feel like they don't have a control. Especially, let's say, if somebody is depressed, then that person's mind, it's a scary place. That person feels like the most darkest place in the whole world is one's mind. Even yesterday, I had a visit to a hospital, and there was a young girl, probably like 25 years old, and suicide attempt. And she was in the ICU. Right? So those type of people, they have no control over their thoughts. They are cut off from the reality. And they feel like that all the negative thoughts, these things come and, you know, trying to strangle them. They take their own life because of these thoughts. Right? So you can see, most of the worldly people, they think that they have no control over these thoughts. Sometimes they think that some other creature, some other demon, or maybe Mara, they are putting these negative thoughts in me. That's what the people think. Mara is putting negative thoughts in me. Mara is putting destructive thoughts in me, right? That way they think. And whenever the positive thoughts come, they think that probably some Deity is putting these positive thoughts in me. Probably Buddha is putting these positive thoughts in me. That way, the worldly people think. They think that they have no control over these things. And whatever the positive or negative thoughts, other creatures, powerful creatures, they are putting these thoughts in me. Mara is putting, or the positive ones, the Buddha is putting. That way they think. That's why sometimes they like to spend time in temples. They go, they stay there. They think that if they stay at a temple long enough, their thoughts will change. They'll become positive. That way they think, right? Sometimes they travel to India on pilgrimage and they go to those places, Buddha's birthplace. And they think that with that travel, they'll be able to replace all the negative thoughts with the positive ones. That way, the people are trying to deal with these negative or the positive thoughts. But when it comes to the practice of mindfulness, we can really say there is nothing as positive or negative thoughts, right? There's nothing as positive or negative thoughts. What is happening is whether you have conscious thoughts, whether you have unconscious thoughts, right? It's a matter of whether you are mindful or whether you are unmindful. Whenever you are unmindful, whatever the things that are happening, they are negative. Whenever you are mindful, whatever the things that are happening, they are positive. That's the way we can talk about this when it comes to the practice of mindfulness. Whether it's a positive thought or a negative thought, so-called worldly meaning, let's say, so-called positive or negative thoughts, if you are unmindful, then it's harming you. So-called positive or negative thoughts, if you are mindful, then it is helping you, right? So that's the way when it comes to the practice. As long as you are unmindful, it is negative. As long as you are mindful, whatever the thoughts you are having, it's positive, right? So that's the proper approach that we can take towards the practice of mindfulness. Don't think about the so-called worldly positive or negative thoughts. Instead, approach these thoughts with the help of mindfulness. Whenever you are mindful, whatever the thought that you have, it could be lust, it could be jealousy, or it could be metta, right? Whatever the thoughts you have, as long as you are mindful, it's positive. Whatever the thoughts you have, if you are unmindful, then it's negative. Let's say even the positive, so-called positive thoughts, like metta or happiness or those things, if you are unmindful, still it is negative. Right? So that approach is much better and much appropriate when it comes to the practice of mindfulness. You don't have things as positive or negative thoughts. It's all about whether you are mindful or unmindful. Right? If you are mindful, then it's positive. If you are unmindful, then it's negative. Right? So that way we can approach. That's why in our practice, we say sometimes we feel these lustful thoughts, or we feel anger in us. We feel jealousy in us. And usually people report about these things negatively. They are saying that I get these type of thoughts. My meditation wasn't good because I had these thoughts in me. But if you listen to the answer that they are given, It's about being mindful. As long as you are mindful, it doesn't matter whether you had lust or whether you had jealousy in you, whether you had a lot of thoughts in you. It doesn't matter. As long as you are mindful, it's positive. If you are unmindful, it's negative. That's the way we can approach this. And when it comes to Eightfold Path, you hear something like right mindfulness and wrong mindfulness. In the Eightfold Path, it says right mindfulness and wrong mindfulness that you might know, right? So you think about what is wrong mindfulness. That's most people wonder what is wrong mindfulness. But when it comes to the Abhidhamma teachings, mindfulness is stated as always positive. Mindfulness is wholesome. Right? Mindfulness is a mental factor only in the wholesome mind. In Abhidhamma, there's this sobhanacitta, that's the word that's used, sobhanacitta. That means wholesome mind. Different mental factors contribute to these sobhanacitta, wholesome minds, right? And whatever the mental factors contribute, mindfulness is a universal factor among all sobhanacitta. Or among all wholesome mind, right? So there is no negative aspect of mindfulness when it comes to the Abhidhamma teachings. Always positive, always wholesome, always beautiful, right? That is the very quality of mindfulness. And how can we have right mindfulness and wrong mindfulness then? In the Eightfold Path, it is said right mindfulness versus the wrong mindfulness. But actually, when it comes to right mindfulness and the wrong mindfulness, it's all about mindfulness and unmindfulness. As long as you are mindful, it's the right mindfulness. If you are unmindful, then it's the wrong mindfulness. That's the very idea of mindfulness when it comes to those teachings, right? Especially when it comes to Abhidhamma, you can see it's a wholesome mental factor. Always beautiful, universal among the sobhanacitta, wholesome mind, right? So that's the very quality of being mindful. If you are mindful, it's always positive, it's always beautiful. If you are unmindful, then that's the wrong part of it. Then it becomes ugly, right? So that's the very approach that we should take towards the practice of mindfulness. And some people wonder, how about a sniper? How about a sniper, right? They do have some kind of a quality that appears like mindfulness. They say sniper, they use wrong mindfulness, that type of a idea they give. But when it comes to mindfulness, you hear being an observer non-judgmentally. That's the quality. No sniper, are they non-judgmental? They have an observation, of course, but they are always caught in their thoughts and emotions. Probably anger, probably revenge, right? That's the driving factors, driving thoughts, driving emotions in them, right? So you can't really say they are mindful. They have a certain level of concentration, of course. They're trying to get their target. And they are really patient towards it. Although it appears like mindfulness, it's not correct. If you know the proper quality, the true mindfulness, you will always know. You become an observer and you are not judgmental. You are not judging. You are not caught in these thoughts or emotions, right? So you can always say, if you are mindful, it's the right mindfulness. If you are unmindful, it's the wrong mindfulness. That's the very quality of mindfulness that we are discussing. Mindfulness is always beautiful. If you are unmindful, it becomes ugly, right? So that's how it is. And let's say when we start our practice, we have a certain level of ugliness in us, right? The practitioners, usually the beginners, they complain a lot. They say, I have this and that, you know, I am like this, I'm doing all these things. That way they think that they have too much ugliness in them, right? Probably true. But when it comes to the mindfulness practice, we say, as long as you are mindful, you are beautiful. Whatever the thoughts, emotions that you have, it doesn't matter. And if you can keep on practicing being mindful, all the ugliness will disappear from you. And you'll become ever beautiful, right? So that's the very idea of this practice. Still, you might have feel certain level of ugly in you. But if you keep on practicing, if you keep on being mindful, those things will disappear little by little, right? That we can feel as practitioners. You can give your testimony towards this. You can practice and see how these things are changing for the better, how you are evolving due to the practice of mindfulness, right? So remember that as long as you are mindful, it's always positive. If you become unmindful, it's negative. Mindfulness is always wholesome, beautiful. That's the very quality of being mindful, right? So when it comes to these type of topics, although it says that negative or positive thoughts, last time we discussed according to that definition, but today I'm saying if you are mindful, it's always positive. If you are unmindful, then it doesn't matter whether you have the thoughts of metta or happiness. It doesn't matter. If you are unmindful, it's always negative, right? So that is the very quality that we have to develop within us. We try to be mindful. Little by little, we try to take that mindfulness towards our daily life as well. We say mindful living. As long as you are living, you can practice. That's the very idea. You could be at work. You could be walking somewhere. You might be having your meals. You are talking to somebody. Whatever that you do, if you are mindful, then that's the proper way of the practice. We say mindful living. It becomes the practice. Simply the meditation becomes living. That's the very idea. So you can start with mindful walking. You can start with mindful sitting. That way you can develop the practice a little. But gradually you have to understand that you can't really limit your practice for the walking or the sitting session. Instead, you have to extend the same very practice towards your daily life as well. That's how you can truly develop the practice of mindfulness. And when you develop that, whatever the ugly thoughts, emotions, behaviors that you have, that's the cognitive behavioral therapy. Cognition means thoughts, behaviors. Then the therapy means the practice of mindfulness, right? So you could have certain thoughts, certain feelings driven by those thoughts, and certain behaviors driven by those thoughts and feelings. But still, if you are mindful, then you are doing the proper therapy. So this is not the real definition in the cognitive behavioral therapy. They talk about the talking therapy. But when it comes to the practice of mindfulness, we say, if you are mindful, then you are doing the therapy. Right? Thoughts are there, then the behaviors are there. But still, if you can be mindful, then that's the way. That's the way towards healing yourself. That's the way towards becoming better, right? You can change this mind for the better. Imagine a person who is suicidal due to their own thoughts and emotions, right? That's how the mind can work towards the negativity. They are cut off from the reality. They don't even know what's happening. No, but they won't hear somebody else's words. They lie in ICU, unconscious. Those doctors and nurses, they just wanted me to go and see her because it could be, you know, some blessing for her. This person who, with attempted suicide, lying down in a ICU bed, right? Unconscious. And whenever she regained the consciousness, the staff is saying she's really aggressive due to those thoughts, due to those emotions. Those aggressive behaviors come, right? So that's how the mind is driven by all these emotions, thoughts, feelings, right? Aggression towards oneself, aggression towards the others. But if you develop this quality of mindfulness, all those aggressions will dissolve little by little. Those thoughts, they have full control over such a person. Those emotions, they have full control over such a person. But when we improve the quality of mindfulness, little by little, these thoughts, they lose power over us. These emotions, they lose power over us. These behaviors driven by thoughts and emotions, they lose power over us. Still the thoughts could be there, still the emotions could be there, but they are powerless. Right? So that's why I said, whenever, if you continue practicing mindfulness, if you develop that quality in you, all the ugliness will disappear. All the ugliness in those thoughts, they will disappear. All the ugliness in those emotions, they will disappear. All the ugliness in those actions, behaviors, they will disappear. That's because the mindfulness is ever beautiful. The mindfulness is ever wholesome. Right? So that's the very idea for today. I thought that this would be a very nice approach towards the practice. So thank you for listening.
Thank you, Bhante. Next, we have any reports that you have received sent to us. We will present it to Bhante for feedback and followed by the Q&A session. For this, I invite Chamari to begin the reports.
Thank you, Sonali. Are you going to share the
instructions? Yeah, thank you.
So for anyone who is joining new, about the practice, there are two short videos provided by Nisaranavane, which is on the screen now, and hopefully Sonali will put it in the chat as well. And they're really easy to follow short videos, and one is for mindful walking, the other one is for sitting practice. So if you
just start by having maybe 5 minutes of both practices and develop it into maybe a few more minutes each day. And once you have about 2 weeks of practice, let's say, just a couple of weeks of practice, you could also write down your experience as a reflection report, either including your questions or statements. So with the mindful walking, just including things like what you felt while walking and the feet movements, body weight shifting, any information and any other sensations, thoughts that you think are important that came and went. Then with the sitting, also the sitting posture, and what was happening in the mind, and any pressure points, incoming, outgoing breath at nostrils, raising of the abdomen, anything else, any other sensations. And also you can include mindfulness during the day as part of your report. And please send the report to beginners@gmail.com via email or via Google Form. Again, the links are on the screen. So what happens is when you send the reports, they will be presented to Bhante and for guidance, further guidance. And also there is the link to recordings, previous recordings in the Nisaranwane website as well. So with that, I move on to the reports that we've received. We've just received one report this time. It starts, mindful walking. Walked indoors. Pace was faster at the beginning. Attention spontaneously was with feet movements, clothes touching body, and other similar sensations of walking. Thoughts would arise and pass in the background without taking up attention. Sounds may have been there, perhaps did not register any. Walking has slowed down a bit and was continuing effortlessly. Towards the end, the pressure points of heels were prominently felt. Walked for 1 hour. Before the walk, the body felt sluggish, but energized afterwards. Mind also noted higher level of alertness afterwards. Walking is becoming a useful tool in shifting bodily and mental energy, apart from noticing rise and fall of experiences. Mindful sitting. Minimal formal sitting practice last week. Knowing this, used travel to office on train, within brackets seated, as sitting practice. Even though not on the usual cushion on floor, it still works. Much of the objects were turned down by closing eyes, just like when at home. Vibrations in body different due to movement of the carriage, but soon body sensations moved into the background. Subtle breath noted, which became prominent with attention. Mind was relaxed as the trip takes up 40 minutes and having had the determination to end the practice after 30 minutes to alight, within brackets again, to alight at the correct destination. The beginning, middle, and end of breath noticed, and the small gap between breaths also at times. Sounds of train, announcements at station, etc. were in background. Opened eyes just after 30 minutes. Restfulness in mind afterwards. Mindfulness during the day. Busy periods are experienced differently to before. like watching a movie, moving conveyor belt of objects and noticing each object and letting go of that, so can see the next one which arrives in front of eyes. Mind is learning to stay on task at hand and letting go once done and attending to next thing that has taken prominence. Both mental and physical effectiveness is higher in these experiences. Few years ago, same situations would bring up restlessness, inner conflict, and resistance in mind. And now, with more acceptance of how things are, more is accomplished and some energy left to rest too. Dear Bhante, look forward to your valuable feedback and immense gratitude for the practical guidance. Theruvan Saranai. That's the end of the report, Bhante.
Okay, thanks for sharing. Now, if we take the first part, the walking mindfulness, that you mentioned that the thoughts arrive and pass in the background without taking the attention, without, you know, grasping the attention, right? So this is the quality that we just talked about. The thoughts could be either positive or negative. It doesn't matter because you are mindful. As long as you are mindful, it is positive. So whatever the thoughts that come, they arrive, they pass. It doesn't matter whether it's positive or negative. Right, so that's the very first thing that I wanted to mention. Most people, they think that in their practice, they shouldn't have thoughts. They shouldn't have thoughts. That's like, you know, being in a temple and expecting the thoughts to be awesome. They spend many hours in a temple or at an auspicious place thinking that that will change their thoughts. Even some monks, I know one of the monks who keep a lot of, you know, auspicious things in his room. His idea is that whenever he sees these statues, Buddha statues, all the signs, body leaves, all those things, the unwholesome thoughts won't come. That's his idea. So he has filled everything in his room with these auspicious signs. But still, it won't be enough. That's the funny thing, right? So you can spend hours in a temple, but still you can't get rid of those things, right? You can fill your room with all those auspicious things, but still those negativity or the negative thoughts will be there, right? The only solution would be mindfulness. And when you are mindful, you shouldn't really suppress your thoughts. Allow them to arrive, allow them to pass as free, right? And you simply be mindful. As long as you are mindful, it doesn't matter whether the thoughts are positive or negative. The practice is correct, right? So that's the very first idea I noticed. Then in the sitting practice, this is the important part. Now, some of you might be really busy with your lives, but still, if you are skillful, if you have the determination, then you will find ways to practice. This is a very good example, right? Seated in a train for 40 minutes every day, work days, weekdays, you may be traveling, right? So why not make it a sitting time? What else would you do if you don't do it, right? So that's the question that you have to ask. If you are not meditating those 40 minutes, what else you would do? Probably you would watch YouTube or listen to some music, watch the surrounding travelers, the passengers, right? So that's the only thing that you would do if you don't practice. So this is a skillful approach towards your life. If you think the practice is important, you will make time. You will find ways, right? So this is very nice. It will be encouraging for others as well. So they too can find such slots in their daily life where they can practice mindfulness. Even let's say maybe lunch at work. If you have some alone time, then those 20, 30 minutes, it could be a mindful eating approach, mindful eating practice, right? 30, 40 minutes of mindfulness during having your meal. Not even 30, 40, probably like 10, 15 minutes having a meal, right? So that way, daily life, you can find many ways to practice if you think the practice is important, right? So that's the second thing I wanted to mention. Then the final one, as you mentioned, it's like objects are moving towards you on a conveyor belt and you give them proper attention and you have to let go in order to make room for the next one, right? So that's the very approach that we should have towards life. Most people, they hold on to things and they miss the things that arrive afterwards. Not just for a minute or two, maybe like for days even they miss. Why they hold on to a single object and they don't want to let go, right? But when it comes to the practice of mindfulness, it's like each and every object is carried through a conveyor belt. And you have to give enough attention towards one. And then you have to let go in order to make room for the next one. Right? That's the way. And sometimes the conveyor belt is moving slow. You can give proper attention to each and every one. Sometimes the conveyor belt is moving fast. Right? Those occasions are also there. Right? And sometimes you feel like you missed certain objects, but you don't have to chase after them. If you keep chasing after them, what will happen? You will miss a whole lot more, right? So that's why the mindfulness, it's given the analogy of a gatekeeper, right? Gatekeeper, you are checking each and every person that crosses through the gate. Sometimes one or two will escape. But if you leave the gate open and, you know, chase after those people, what will happen? Whole lot more will get in. Right? So you can't really think about the ones who escaped. Just let them go. Still protect the gate. That's the proper approach. So even on the conveyor belt analogy, sometimes it's moving too fast. You feel like you miss certain things, but you don't have to chase after them. Just protect the present moment. Protect whatever crosses that moment. If it is in the past, it's in the past. Right? So that's the very approach. A conveyor belt, the objects carried on a conveyor belt, or a gatekeeper, that type of analogy is given for the practice of mindfulness. You have to make sure that you give proper attention to the object on hand and let it go in a sufficient time so you can make room for the next one, right? That's how we can really live this life. Otherwise, what will happen is that you will hold on to something and you will miss a whole lot that comes afterwards. You miss living the life. Right? Because of holding on to things. Imagine how many opportunities we missed because we were holding on to things in the past. Imagine how many things that we haven't noticed because we were holding on to the past. Right? So if you really want to live, this is the way. This is the way. So we are happy that you are making progress. Continue and let us know your progress again.
Thank you, Bante, for that feedback. And that's the end of the reports. But we do have some time for questions. If anyone has any questions, this is the time. And please raise your Zoom hand and we will let you ask the question or share the statement.
Yes, Panchi.
Please unmute and ask your question.
Hello, Bante. Hello, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Panchini.
It's not a question, Bante. Just wanted to share my experience since I've been suffering with a fracture for about 5 weeks now. I fell in January and fractured my arm. I was doing so well until I actually broke my arm. I was controlling my thoughts, keeping the wholesome, letting go of the unwholesome. Even family members were noticing the difference, and then I fell and fractured the arm. Now I'm really noticing the unwholesome arising in me. Like, sometimes I get really discouraged because I can't believe after this much of years of practice, well, 6 years of practice, I'm still getting these unwholesome thoughts. Like yesterday when my husband went for a jog, when I couldn't go out, I could feel how the jealousy arising in me. So I can't do a lot of things the others are doing. Not being able to exercise so much as well, go out for walks. Yeah, that's contributing as well, the resentment, the anger. I mean, I'm controlling them, but yeah, more unsuccessful than successful these days. One thing. Just wanted to share with you.
How did you manage the pain of a fractured arm?
Oh, Bante, the pain is not a problem at all. I mean, even when they pulled the arm, I was watching the pain. Like, the whole practice these days is just observing the pain. And I don't take any drugs. That side is just amazing. Like, I'm totally at ease with the pain. But all the other stuff is really getting me down. Yeah.
Okay, right. So that's a good sign that you could, you know, really manage the pain with the power of mindfulness. And, you know, when it comes to the bones, the pain created with the bone fractures, that's the extreme kind of pain that one would experience, right? And even that type of a pain could be manageable with the power of mindfulness. And yesterday, during that hospital visit, actually I had to go to do a program for the pregnant women, right? They called it the mindful clinic. And most of them were new, and we had to, you know, just simply introduced the practice of mindfulness. But I told them that although it's too early to talk about these things, when it comes to the practice of mindfulness, it can really help with the pain and the fear. Usually they fear, especially if it's the first child, they fear the childbirth as well as, you know, the pain, right? So that was one of the comments that I made. But you have to go and ask them, because, you know, pregnancy is something out of my knowledge, right? So you have to really experience, go through it and see whether it is helping or whether it's too much to manage. Anyway, one of the positive signs of mindfulness or the power of mindfulness, it helps with the pain a lot, right? Then when it comes to negative or the wholesome or unwholesome thoughts, today's topic is the correct one for you, right? We talked about how the wholesomeness or the unwholesomeness arises. It's not because of so-called negative or positive thoughts. It's a matter of being mindful or unmindful. If you are mindful, it doesn't matter what are the thoughts that you're having, still it's wholesome. If you are unmindful, then it's unwholesome, right? That's the proper attitude that we have to give to all the practitioners. It's not about having thoughts. It's about being mindful or unmindful, right? That's why the mindfulness is considered wholesome or beautiful, right? Only applicable in the positive or the wholesome mind, right? So that's the quality that you have to develop. Don't think that because of so many years of practice, these things would disappear. Actually, you have to get into some trouble or difficult patch in order to see the real nature of this mind, right? As long as you are comfortable, you don't feel these things. But when you go through a rough patch, then only you see how this mind's behavior, right? So if we think the practice is working really well, till we come into a rough patch, then it feels like the whole world is collapsing, right? But after the rough patch, again, you feel, okay, I can practice. I am almost done, kind of a feeling. Then again, when it comes to a rough patch, again, you go hit the rock bottom and say, now it's not working, right? But the whole practice is going through these phases, right? In the positive phases, it's like, you know, everything is building properly. In the negative places, it feels like everything is collapsing. When you practice for a long period, what happens is that you have gone through so many positive and negative patches, phases. It doesn't matter whether it's positive or negative. Your mind is unmoved by the difficult times or the good times, right? So you have to go through such phases. Many years of practice go through different phases of life, different experiences. And towards the end of it, when you come out from the other side, you realize because you have gone through so many experiences, because you have gone through so many phases, now whatever happens, the mind is unmoved, right? So that's the very idea. So you have to be glad about those difficult or the rough patches. Otherwise, you won't get this teaching. You will think that I am all good, my meditation is done. That type of a thinking you will have. But when you go and hit the rock bottom, then only you realize, okay, still the unwholesome thoughts are there. Still I am full of jealousy. Still I am, you know, struggling. Then again, when you recover, again, you feel like everything is okay, my practice is perfect. But again, when you hit the rough patch, then you feel still not proper. That's why even the forest monks, there are certain stories about them. They live in the forest all alone, right? And they are, after many meditating for many years, they feel like they are enlightened. They feel like their practice is done. Now nothing to do there, no, right? Practice is done, meditation is over, and they come to the village. And when they come to the village, when they see the other people, when they interact with them, then only they realize, still I have these defilements, still I am not enlightened. Why? Because you had to go through those difficulties. Right? When it comes to the village, only you'll see the difficulties, the real problems. Right? As long as you are in the forest, aloneness, you feel like you are enlightened. You come to the village, you face those people, certain situations, then you realize I still not. Right? So that's the way. So you have to have these rough patches. But we are not going searching for them. Instead, the nature will bring those things towards us. And whenever they come, though you can't reject. You shouldn't be rejecting. and said, just go through those patches and see how can you improve your practice with the support of them, right? So can you be glad towards the rough patch that you are facing?
I will try. Not sure. I'll lie to you, Bhante. It's hard.
So it's teaching you so many lessons, you know?
Oh, yes. I've been learning lessons since last year. Thank you, Bhante. It helps just talking to you.
Thank you, Panchini, for that very relevant question. We will all go through these things, and the feedback really helps. Any more questions? This is your time. We've still got about 7-8 minutes. Yes, Samantha, please unmute and present your question.
I can. I couldn't unmute earlier on. Thank you, Bhante. That was in line with the valuable talk that Bhante was giving in this session. I was just wondering, so when we are just watching our thoughts, I've been sort of like watching them during the day and just noticed the thoughts are just like keep coming, or various thoughts, and sometimes they proliferate and they go into, you know, maybe sometimes reactions because of our mindfulness. So, and then I sort of realize, oh no, this isn't what we're supposed, you know, we have to be mindful of the thoughts, and, you know, all the time, whether it's whatever that's arising. So then it got me thinking, would I really have to sort of like, when I see the rising of the thought, should I also show my mind the ending of the thought, stay with the thought, and watch the thought, how it ends? Then would I be sort of like, help me not react later on? I'll be developing I'll be sort of like trying to develop a state of equanimity where we are balanced mind, where we're then we just don't react to any situations. Would that be the end goal? I mean, by watching the ending of the thought that has arisen, would that be helpful as well, Bhante?
Yeah, of course you can try that. It's like, you know, the noble experiment. You can try different ways. Usually, we grab the middle part of a thought, but the beginning and the ending of the thoughts you can observe with the help of mindfulness. But what happens mostly is that you will jump into a fresh thought instead of noticing the end of a particular thought that you are having, right? And in the process, sometimes you miss the other things that come, trying to catch those thoughts, right? So this could be a way to, you know, experiment with the practice. It is fine. It's okay to do such things. But when it comes to, you know, developing the practice further, remember the earlier report that we had, it was talking about a conveyor belt carrying certain objects. So you have to, you know, give proper attention, let it go in order to make room for the next one, right? So that's the present moment, always evolving. When you try to chase after a certain thought, trying to catch its tail end, what happens is that you go away from the present moment trying to catch it. But sometimes in our meditation, let's say sitting, walking practice, sometimes you feel like, you know, you are noticing the end of those thoughts. It happens automatically. Like due to the power of mindfulness, you are noticing how each and every thought is arriving and how it is leaving, right? So that level of practice, it is okay. And even as an experiment, it's okay. But you have to understand the present moment is always evolving. You can't pause it in order to go do something else, right? So that's the idea. I think for you, the confidence is important in the practice. How to gain the confidence? The only way is to, you know, do many hours of practice. That's the only way to develop confidence, right? Most people, they are doubtful. And we tell them that you have to grow the confidence. If you have the confidence, these things are not issues. How to develop the confidence? You have to do many hours of formal practice. That's how you can develop the confidence, right? It's like developing a skill, let's say driving, especially when it comes to ladies, when they drive, it's a heck of a task, right? But that's for a beginner. And when they drive for many hours, what will happen? They develop the confidence. Now, you don't have to think about it. It just happens, right? So that's because of many hours of practice. You develop the confidence and you are not doubtful anymore to handle the vehicle properly. Same goes for the practice. So if you do many hours of formal practice, not in a day, I mean, like every day, a couple of hours, like that continue for some time, few months, few years, then you realize the confidence is growing. And as a result, all those doubts will disappear. No amount of convincing will do. Right? You have to get rid of them by yourself, by developing the confidence, right? So that's the idea. It's okay to do such things as a one-off case, but in long run, you have to make sure that that you are embracing the ever-evolving present moment. It's always evolving. You can't pause it in order to do something else.
Thank you so much for that feedback, Bhante. And
thank you, Bhante. Sorry. Yeah, I just want to say thank you, Bhante. That was very helpful. I'll carry on with meditation. I'll make more of an effort. Thank you.
Thank you, Samantha. So it just brings us sharp to 9 a.m. And I will now hand over to Sonali to end the session.
Thank you, Chamari. I did see another hand, but I think she has put it down again. I think it's time to end the session now anyway. Thank you, everyone. So on behalf of the organizers, I'd like to thank Venerable Dhammakusala Thero for his continued guidance on this program. And we cannot forget the Chief Abbot of Nisaranawanaya, Venerable Udayiriyagama Dhammajiva Mahathero, whose idea was to initiate this program. May these merits help them improve their own practice as well. Thank you to all the organizers who are working really hard behind the scene. And thank you to everyone who's written reports and participated via Zoom, Facebook live stream, or anyone who will be watching later. So as usual, our program will commence at 1 p.m. Sri Lankan time. And I will now end the session. May you all have a happy and mindful week ahead.